Blog Talk Radio.
Abundance means that everyone can have a life where basic needs are met and also have the possibility to reach their full potential. The framework for achieving this goal is the abundance pyramid. Tonight, we look at the middle layer, which contains three things that enable community and commercial activity. I'm Cliff, the change agent. This is Jump to the Next Level.
Many people sense that something is wrong, like a dull ache just below the surface. The American dream doesn't seem to be working anymore. Not everyone gets a house with a white picket fence, a chicken in every pot, and more successful children. Are you working hard but can't make ends meet, even with two incomes? Do you see the steady rise in homelessness, hunger, and stagnation despite the official statistics? Has chasing the American dream led to piles of debt and a rat race for jobs without meaning? Enough of this one-size-fits-all vision of happiness. The traditional worldviews simply don't have the frame of reference that can describe, much less understand, what's going on today. Those old frames of reference worked well enough for people old enough to remember World War II, but those default visions just don't cut it anymore. And traditional institutions like the media, schools, and government don't have anything better to offer either. It's time to jump to a new vision, a new American dream, because we are in a new era, a new age. The shift requires us to reimagine the way we work, play, grow, and interact with our surroundings. I call it the new economy. Instead of collecting more things, people will focus on awakening their full potential. That includes helping others and making sure that having enough is a sustainable lifestyle. Our vision has four pillars: health, sustainability, peace, and abundance. We make progress by focusing on projects that build up each pillar for a season: the summer of peace, the autumn of abundance, and so on. Everything seems to be in chaos because we are in the transition, several years into a multi-year shift, and the old systems are being overwhelmed. This show not only explores the new era and the transition, we engage with the solutionary doers and thinkers who are creating this next stage for the human race. Most important, we sketch out the blueprint for joining and thriving in the new economy. Don't get caught up in the drumbeat of tragedy that you hear in today's mass media. Jump on board and help us build the next level.
Hey, welcome everyone. I'm glad you joined me tonight. It's Tuesday. It's also a full moon. And I'm broadcasting from Chesterfield, Missouri, which is West St. Louis. The moon came up tonight and it was absolutely gorgeous, in spite of the fact that the temperatures are hovering near freezing. And this South Texas boy is just not used to that. Corinne's off tonight, but she'll be back with us soon. And I'm looking forward to that. So let's get started. Let's consider progress in just one application: the effect of technology on disaster relief. State-of-the-art transportation and communication for most of civilized history was carried out on horseback. We wouldn't even know about people starving due to a disaster on the other side of the world, much less have the means to help. Now, jump forward to today, and we have an advanced communication network which sustains us to discover disasters in remote areas like the Sudan in almost real time. Life-sustaining supplies can be delivered via C-130 transport. The capability allows us to carry 42,000 pounds of cargo 8,000 miles in 24 hours. Think about it. That is a 56,000-fold increase in capacity. It's also, if you look at it a different way, 18 1,800 horsepower compared to 1 horsepower. A quote from the book Abundance by Stephen Kotler and Peter Diamandis. So tonight we're going to talk about the middle layer of the abundance pyramid. And I want, by way of introduction, I want to start by reviewing what we've covered in the previous episodes. There have been three. And start by pointing out, just like in the opening quote, that things in just about every area have been getting better throughout history. Well, so why are people so pessimistic? Why is there all this moaning pessimism? Well, people think that the world is in a hole that's just too deep to climb out of. They're stuck in the old cognitive bias of not really being able to process all the information they see. And the natural filters that your brain has tend to be pessimistic by nature. They also tend to have people, and I'm just as guilty as anyone, tend to have a local and linear view when the actual world is global and exponential. It causes us to be local optimists. I mean, pretty cool where we live, but it's horrible worldwide. You know, we humans are just limited. That's really the issue. There's a thing called Dunbar's number that says you can only really know 150 people. It doesn't matter how many people are on your Twitter feed or how many Facebook friends you have. You can only really know 150 people. And that's your tribe. The pyramid that we've been talking about is really a model or a framework for how we provide abundance, as I described at the beginning, for the coming 9 billion people, because that's how many people there will be on the planet by 2050. The bottom layer, which we talked about a few weeks ago, was about pure survival. You know, clean, safe drinking water, nutritious food, and shelter. We're going to speak mostly about the middle layer today. It's not about survival. It's actually the thing that enables specialization. It allows us to create communities and even global commerce. Okay, so let's dive into each of the three blocks and take a deeper look. The first block in the middle is energy. Let's face it, energy is the great enabler. In fact, the industrial age wasn't even possible without the advent of cheap fossil fuel. Well, we still have plenty of fossil fuel, but it hasn't been cheap since the 1970s. Really, the Arab oil embargo of 1970 and 71 signaled the first nail in the coffin of the industrial age. There were many other signs in the five-year period in the first half of the 1970s, but fossil fuel, or the end of cheap energy, was the first. So as we move into the new age, it's not about fossil fuel so much as how do we create renewable fuel? Energy is the great enabler still. How many of the other blocks are absolutely enabled by energy? Think about them one after the other, and you'll see that pretty much all of them require energy. But it leaves us with the challenges of trying to come up with sustainable, renewable energy. That's what the new age is about. There's a whole lot of challenges, and I'm just going to list them. First is decentralizing electricity. Second, it's solar power achieving non-subsidized cost parity with the grid. That means that solar energy in and of itself without government subsidies costs the same as electricity that came from fuel or natural gas fired plants. Another of our great challenges is to create storage technologies that don't rely on rare earth elements. Right now, our best batteries are lithium ion. Lithium is a rare earth element. If you have a cell phone, most of us do, you are very dependent on rare earth elements. There's some interesting work in sodium, which is a common element. And once non-rare earth batteries become a reality, we will have moved a long way toward energy abundance. There's another challenge, and that's the reality of transportation. Transportation takes up 80% of our energy consumption. And even though there are electric cars, electric trucks are transporting heavy loads. In other words, the goods and services of the goods that we need to survive just can't be done with electricity. We're going to have to find economically scalable biofuels. We can create biofuels, but we can't scale them economically yet. So I've laid out a bunch of challenges. We have great minds working on them, and I have faith that there will be solutions. For the purposes of abundance, I think we should state our objective as far as energy. I think we have two really great objectives. The first is to offer everyone on the planet United States levels of carbon-free energy. That's a big challenge. And I like this definition of energy abundance. It means that there are squanderable amounts of completely renewable, i.e. sustainable, energy. And squanderable means that energy costs are reduced to pennies per kilowatt. Is it a dream? I think not. If you think about how much solar energy hits the earth, if we can learn to harness that, we can have squanderable amounts of completely renewable energy. Think about it. It's the dream that we really ought to be working toward in terms of energy. The second block in the middle of the abundance pyramid is education. We all know that a healthy economy is based on the exchange of information. But did you know that the body of knowledge now doubles every 9 months? Now, it took the 20-year period from 1985 to 2004 to double knowledge. And that was, at the time, a breakneck fast pace. And now it's down to 9 months. That quick pace means people need to be in a constant state of learning. Now, what they need to learn is going to be based on their current focus, not their age, not their, have you gone to college, but what they're currently focusing on. And actually, one new area in education that's going to become a huge market over the next few years is attention management. That's helping others figure out what to pay attention to and learn about. Now, lest you think I'm completely trashing the old system, I want to give a shout out and applause to the public school system. Free public education is such a huge leap forward from what came before it. Horace Mann, the father of the public school system, was truly a visionary and change agent. Prior to him, only the clergy and the children of the rich were educated. The problem with public schools is that that model is 150 years old, and it reinforces the values of the industrial age. With the public school systems, you get uniform class schedules, mandatory attendance, uniform curriculum. You even get bells that mimic the factory whistles. Public education is still about rote memorization and conformity. We need to rethink everything about public education, right down to the idea that classes should be grouped by age. Now, I don't want to blame the public school system itself. I want to put the blame squarely in the finance of public education or education in general. Those that attend college get saddled with debt that's difficult to pay off. Public schools are financed by a complicated system of property taxes and federal money. And yes, that's right, federal dollars come with strings attached. Somehow, very little of those vast sums of money spent seem to trickle down into the place where it's needed most, the classroom. My vision for the 21st century needs to be something different. Yeah, we still need the three R's. They are basic, and no matter how fast you are on the keyboard, you still need to learn how to read and write so you can type those words into the keyboard. Even if you're not texting full words like LMAO. Now, past the three R's, there's some other skills that don't seem to be being taught in schools. I'm going to specifically name critical thinking, problem-solving skills, creativity skills, and collaboration. In math, the key higher skills are now statistics, probability, and at least for a while, programming skills. Algebra, not so much. I just read a study of people who are 1 year out of MIT, one of the premier engineering colleges in the United States. And they were polled, again, like I said, they were 1 year out of college, and they were polled on what they use math for. And guess what? The math skills they needed to get along in life were arithmetic, statistics, and probability. Almost none of them even mentioned algebra. What about rote memorization? Well, that was a really important skill, and a good memory was great. And then along came Google. Now it's got a competitor named Bing. Why do you need to memorize things if you can Google it? Well, unless you're a contestant on Jeopardy. Rote memorization is just so old school. So the learning models that seem to be working today are project-based learning. Learning that's based in game theory. How many people like video games out there? And for skills that are currently in demand in the marketplace, apprenticeships. I'm acquainted with a fellow named Isaac and his company Praxis. Helps people get apprenticeships because that is so preferable and can get you in the job market so much faster than going to college. I think the education model of the future is decentralized and personalized. That means on demand. Our next topic, in other words, the next block of the abundance pyramid, is about enabling the decentralization and personalization I'm talking about. Since a couple of minutes ago, I talked about the evils of debt in college. It's time for a word from our sponsor, Debt Hackers. Debt is one of the key ways that you become trapped in someone else's dream instead of the vision you choose. Are you overloaded with debt from college loans, medical bills, credit cards, or other kinds of debt? You aren't alone. Houses, cars, and education are so expensive these days that almost everyone must take on debt to own them. Then the lender has a say in how you live your life because you must earn the money to make the payments. The whole economy is built on the quicksand of buy now, pay later thinking. This certainly extends to most big ticket items with inflated prices, since they allow you to make easy payments that seem small. They add up to a trap that robs you of the choices that the new economy offers, the very stuff we are talking about on this radio show. That's why I started Debt Hackers, to help individuals and families reduce the debt they already have and maybe even eliminate it. It's even better when we can help clients find alternatives to avoid debt in the first place. Does this sound good to you? Then visit debthackers.org and sign up now. If you sign up for our mailing list, I'll send you our free 5-minute credit card organizer. Knowing what's in your wallet is the first step to taking back control of your debt. You can sign up at changeagentpublications.leadpages.co/opt-in-5-min-cc. Heck, that's too complicated. Just drop me a line, cliff@debthackers.org, and I'll hook you up. Now back to the show. Okay, so the third block is information and communication technologies. There's so much to talk about, I'm not even sure where to start. I'm going to list some of the technologies that fit into this category without really talking about them. There's networks. You've got to be in favor of networks or you wouldn't be listening on the internet. Artificial intelligence. If you think that's a far-off concept, have you asked Siri any questions lately? And who hasn't seen and marveled at what 3D printing is doing? They've even 3D printed a house. I'm staring at my smartphone. And one of the bigger enabling technologies is something called the cloud. That's a place where you can store data and enable a lot of sharing. Well, what's the value of information and communications technology? There's many, many of them. But one of them is something we talked about a second ago back in education. And that's the tools of cooperation. So I've got a list here of 8 things that technology or communication and information technology, or ICT as we call it for short, the advantages of cooperation that are enabled by ICT. First, there are gains in connectivity and the increased speed in communication. When Abraham Lincoln was elected president, many Americans didn't even know he was president until after the election, and not just after the election, but after the inauguration. The last several presidents, we have known who the winner was not long after they declared it. In the most recent election, I went to bed not knowing, mainly because I didn't want to know. Not because I didn't have the ability to know. The second advantage is the increased division of labor. And that means greater participation for anyone who wishes to in the greater economy. The third advantage is scale, because information and communication technology enables vast instant networks. The fourth advantage is replication. That means that you can repeat your successes over and over. Fifth is accountability. That means the increased evaluation of what's going on. Other people call it transparency. It gives you better everything from democracy to telemedicine. The sixth advantage is better matching of buyers and sellers. It tends to allow people to build relationships and it seems kind of paradoxical that people stare at their computers or their smartphones and build better relationships with other individuals, but it happens. Some people even call the commercial side of that long-tail economics, because it's about relationships more than individual transactions. The seventh advantage and tool of cooperation are communities of interest. One of the really interesting ones is SETI at Home, which allows people to everywhere to help in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. If people were bound by geography, it would have been a lot more difficult for them to find other people, for them to find people with common interests. With the internet, you can find, it's much easier to find communities of interest. And the eighth tool of cooperation is also the last block we talked about, education and training. Information and communication technology enables the global classroom. So now there you have it, the three blocks that form the middle of the pyramid. So why can this happen? By that, I don't mean just the middle blocks of the pyramid. I mean the whole idea of abundance. Why is it a reality that is a possible future as opposed to just a pipe dream? Well, there's a lot of forces that are enabling it, and I'm going to name and discuss some of them here. The first is the DIY, which is also called do-it-yourself or the maker movement. Americans have always been about DIY. Popular Mechanics has been or was a huge success for probably 100 years before I was born. And people who didn't have the means to buy things were interested in making them up until the code hacking, until computers came along and code hacking became chic. In fact, Americans and their ability to fix things was something of legend worldwide. I have a friend who was in the Army and stationed in Japan, and the Japanese people actually believed that Americans could fix anything. And when their radio went out, they just expected that my friend, who knew nothing about transistors and electronics, could fix it because he was an American. So as the code hacking that I was became the chic thing, like I was talking about a minute ago, the whole DIY movement was kept alive by the Whole Earth Catalog, at least with 60s hippies. In the 70s, homebrew computing became popular and gave rise to many fortunes. You might have heard of Bill Gates. You might have heard of Steven Jobs. They started out as hobbyists in a club. But the DIY movement has exploded again, but in all sorts of ways and places. Just a quick list of examples. Burning Man's radical self-sufficiency and creation of art installations are a DIY movement. There's actually a group called DIY Drones, which are about, as you guessed, building drones. In fact, I read a really funny story about how someone took the autopilot from a Lego set and put it in a drone. Actually, it was his 9-year-old that did it, made it work, and then very quickly learned that that sort of thing was on the list of restricted commercial export. So effectively, he was very proud that his 9-year-old weaponized Legos. Now, these DIY drones have much further-reaching real-world applications, like disaster relief, where roads have washed out or never even existed at all. And they're even being used to monitor endangered species, specifically the Siberian tiger. Now, DIY has even gotten into genetics. I think you can buy a kit to do cloning for about the price of a used car. Now, the DIY spirit gets inserted into even bigger projects like space exploration. You might have heard of Spaceship One or the company SpaceX or even electric cars and battery technologies. DIY generally has the effect of demonetization, which lines up with abundance. And it challenges big science. Many of the projects I just mentioned formerly were the domains of big federal grants and big science. The second positive force I'm going to talk about is techno-philanthropy. That is where
I'm so grateful you chose to spend this time with me. Remember that every one of us builds this new era one choice at a time. Start living now like it's already here. Commit a random act of kindness this week. Make healthy, sustainable choices. Choose peace. Choose abundance. Then celebrate your progress and passion. It is important to know that the future is in your hands. You create it through the choices you make in the now. See you next week.